The Swinging Palm Trees podcast with Akin.
Greetings and salutations. We're by the Swinging Palm Trees, where we take a step away from it all and discuss quotes or memorable sayings that have had a positive impact in the lives of my guests. Be the lines be spiritual, philosophical, or pop cultural, we'll discuss them. And on today's show, we have Ellie, who, by her own description, is a millennial trying her hand at adulting. Welcome to the show, Ellie.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you so much. So, Ellie, tell us all a bit about yourself.
I am 30 years old. And when the world is working as normal, I work in the events industry as a client account manager, managing promoters, their events on our platform, and just managing the relationships all around that goes around the events, so customer services, the promoters, venues, as well as outside. And that's my day today. It's filled with emails. That's a good description of my job, emails every day.
And being a millennial, I would have thought that emails was something you'd be comfortable with.
Emails are great, but I have a lot of emails. They're never ending.
So let me ask you a question. When was the last time you put pen to paper to write a letter?
Whoa, a letter?
Yes, you know.
People do do that.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. What? No, I've thought about it and it is a good idea. I just do notes and text them over to my friends if I want to write something really nice and beautiful instead of an actual handwritten letter. But it is a good idea. I probably will do it.
So you're telling me in all your 30 years, you have never taken a pen?
But I was in high school and it was to a boyfriend. I was 15. Of course you did that at 15. Who didn't do that at 15?
So was it one of those love letters that you wrote in class and you passed it to someone else who would hand it on to him in question, that kind of thing?
Yes. It's so embarrassing, but yeah. It made logical sense at the time. Now it's just cringeworthy, like, why?
So Ellie, you work in the entertainment industry.
Yes, I do.
What was the last gig you saw before, unfortunately, COVID disrupted life as we know it?
I believe it was Tenny. Was it Tenny? I think it was Tenny at the Indigo.
How was she?
Yeah. She was amazing. It was really, really good. I enjoyed myself so much. Like, it's the only one that's made it to my Instagram, so I must have really enjoyed it.
You know what? We'll come back to that. But your name, Ellie. What's the full name? Just your first name.
My full first name is Ellie Binai.
And where is that from in terms of origin?
My dad made it up.
I'm laughing because I went onto Google to see exactly what it means and nothing came up except for you, what you do. And I thought, what kind of name is Ellie if I can't find anyone that's worth that name?
No, it is made up. My dad made it up, and he's made his own meaning, and his meaning is one loved by her father.
That is so nice.
It is. It just makes it very hard to Google yourself because, you know, you kind of want to know where does your name originate from, but it really originated from my dad's head because he's Eliezer, and so he named me Ellie Binai. So that it's both names start with E-L-I. But the rest of my siblings, their names are from the Bible, strangely enough. So I don't know what was going on with him when I was born. But everybody's names are Christian, Bible related. They are all E-L-I, but mine was completely made up.
So in other words, you are your father's apple in his eye.
I don't know, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, I suppose. I have no idea.
So originally,
I'm the most, so I'm like, I don't know. Am I? I fight even the most compared to everybody else. But maybe, I don't know.
So Ellie, you're on the show today, and you're going to discuss with us your saying or proverb or quote. What exactly is it?
So I have two. One is a poem. The other one is a saying, which you've probably heard. So the Serenity Prayer. And that's always stayed with me because the first time, I think I was in high school, the first time I had it, and I was like, yeah, this is the story of my life, really. The Serenity Prayer goes, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And that is a guiding saying, principle, prayer for my life, because sometimes I don't have the energy to pray. Sometimes I just feel broken or tired and I just can say the Serenity Prayer, like, Lord, help me to understand, to accept. Or if I'm frustrated or if I'm getting angry or if I'm like confused, like, I did everything right. What is going on? That sort of pulls me back, that I'm not supposed to always understand. I'm not supposed to always know the reasons. I just need the grace and the courage to just accept those things that are not in my control, that I'm not always going to be in control. I'm a Virgo, so being in control is very much within my soul. I want to control, I want to be in control of everything that happens around me. So when things happen outside of my control, not necessarily bad, just outside of my control, I probably will lose my mind. But that sort of keeps me in check, that you're not supposed to know. You're not supposed to always be in control. You're not supposed to always have it together. Sometimes just be in the moment, accept what is now, because it's leading somewhere. You just don't know where yet, but it's leading somewhere. And that's been my life. Like, something bad will happen and then it's like, what? And then afterwards you go, oh, that makes sense. That's why we had to go through that. It was leading us to this other place. So yeah, the Serenity Prayer.
And the Serenity Prayer, what drew you to it?
I think it was because we tend to, I don't know, I'm from a Christian background, and I think we tend to take this attitude that we should pray to God. It's as if we're commanding God to do this, to do that, to do that. And then sometimes it drew me because it was actually like acceptance. Sometimes you just need to accept that you can't change certain things, that certain things just happen and that's just life. And that there is nothing, no amount of commanding God, no amount of prayer is going to change. I'm not saying don't pray, but it reminded me that God is not there for us to command him to say, can you do this? Can you do that? Oh, God, do this. Oh, God, do that. Oh, God, do that. Sometimes he just needs us to accept that challenge or that thing that's going on, because there's either a lesson at the end of it or a strength that it's going to give us that we didn't have before. Or a lesson that we are going to be able to teach other people that we didn't know that we could do. So that's why I think for me it drew me in, because it felt like that was the essence of God. He's not there to just answer all our prayers. I believe he's there to walk beside us while we go through this thing called life, which can be challenging sometimes. It can be beautiful. It can be amazing at times. And a lot of the times it can be confusing, like, what is going on, like today.
It's interesting you say that, because I know, even as a Christian, there are times I feel that God should be the genie in the lamp. I just rub the bottle and say, okay,
yeah,
God, make it happen. Come on, yep. God, make it rain.
Mm-hmm.
And I come to realize that, no, it doesn't work like that.
No.
In question. So as a millennial trying her hand adulting, does the Serenity Prayer work for you all the time?
Especially in the hardest times, because when things are going good, most of us, it's easy to praise God and be grateful and see the good in life. But when things are hard or confusing or just not making sense, the Serenity Prayer 100% helps to sort of bring me back to, don't just be praying to, oh God, please do this for me. Oh God, please do this for me. Oh God, this. It's like, no, sometimes you just need to ask God to walk beside you or to help you to accept that thing that's happened. And it's not because he doesn't love you. It's not because he's abandoned you. No, it's just that things that we don't like happen in life, things that we didn't plan for happens in life, because that's just life. It has the good and has the bad. So it helped me a lot to accept some of the things that I was questioning, because I think there was a time where I was like, God, why me? God, why? And it's like, there is no why, really. Just ask God to help you accept and get through this. Give you the courage to accept the things that you didn't plan, that were out of your control, as the controlling human being that I am. So, the serenity prayer has been good.
So the serenity prayer, I could say, strengthens your faith in God.
It does. It does. It strengthens my faith. It gives me hope. It gives me courage. And it's such a simple prayer that, especially when you're just feeling doubt or you're feeling drained, that you can just say it, but it means so much. It's like straight and direct to God's ears, without faffing about, without spending hours, you know, night visuals, those are good things, but sometimes you just need to go straight to God's ears. To give you strength. It's not because you're giving up as well, or that you don't want miracles to happen. It's just, so there are things that we just have to accept and be okay with that we didn't plan for.
So going back to Serenity's prayer, have you ever found yourself in a situation where you've said, I'm not going to use this prayer. I'm just going to do my own thing in question to see if this will help me through this trying time?
I mean, I believe in God works beside you to produce miracles. But I also think you have to work. You can't say, Lord, I want this. I believe in you work towards what you want, and God sends his angels alongside to sort of give you a helping hand sometimes, to make an opportunity, to where a miracle is needed for there to be a miracle. But you've worked to get there. You've put in the work to get there. That's what I truly believe. So it's alongside my hard work, alongside my own tenacity. And then God is just there to sort of, you know, a little push. As his child, because that's what parents do. You push your child a little bit. You don't do everything for them. You don't just magically have things happen. No, you let them learn lessons and you push them just a little bit, like, here you go. You know, but they go to the place themselves, you push the handle down, and then you see what it is that they're trying to get out of whatever door they've just opened. So I believe that God walks beside us while we have to work hard as well. I don't believe in you just wake up and things are happening. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you wake up and you're like, what? Thank you, God. I didn't expect that. But I think a lot of the times, the things we really want, we do have to work very hard for.
Okay.
To get there. And then God just opens up the small doors where you go, okay, I've done everything right. I don't know what's going wrong. And then a miracle somehow happens. And you're like, wow. Those are the moments. I think those are the moments where God exists. That's where you see God. For me, that's where I see God, where you've done everything you can possibly do. And just when you're about to give up, it's like he comes in and just opens that little door. And sometimes it's so small that you could easily miss it, but he's there. That's where God shows up for me.
Fascinating. So I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know you're from Rwanda.
Yes.
And what is your native dialect? Because I'm not sure whether you're Hutu or Tutsi. Am I saying it right?
It is Hutu or Tutsi. Those are ethnic groups. And people assume that somehow there's an actual difference. We speak the same language. For the most part, we have the same culture and customs. There may be like slight differences depending on which area of the country you're in. Because we border so many countries, some customs may have changed slightly, but we're practically the same people. Like, we're like the same culture, same customs. Majority of us are Christians. There's a few minority that is Muslim, but most of us are Christian. Like, over 90% of the country is Christian, the last I checked. So there isn't much difference in the ethnic groups, which is why it's a bit hard sometimes when people go, are you this? And I'm like, well, for me, I'm mixed. And then I'm like, because of how much it caused so much conflict in our country, I don't even like to. So if I was to then answer that, so if the government was asking me, I would have to answer according to what my dad is. But in my life, I've said that I would never answer that question because this thing has caused so much conflict and pain for my people, and it doesn't make sense to me. It has hurt both sides. It has, like, we were broken, we were a failed state, and I just don't like it. So I'm like, nope, I do not identify as either. If it's like they're holding a gun to my head because somehow the Rwandese government wants to know, fine. But everywhere else in the world, they just know that I'm born Rwandese. That's it. But that's the only time I would answer it, as in the Rwandan government wants to know and they're holding a gun to my head and I have to answer this question. That's the only time. And I decided this a long time ago because I was like, no, because then people have a preconceived idea of who you are. And it's like, I was four when this war happened. But as soon as you identify as one, you're either the victim or the perpetrator. And I'm like, no. Both sides have been manipulated for a very long time, that by the time the war happened, you could literally look through history and see that it was literally a, like, it's like you've shaken the bottle, and as soon as you open it, it just poof, everything comes out. And it's just bad. And I just, even with my own people, we don't talk about it. We don't. I don't acknowledge any of that. I acknowledge the pain and the loss that people have gone through. But in terms of those two ethnic groups, I don't acknowledge you. We have three. So I don't like that. But recently I found out that we have clans in our country, which make more sense. And the clans have, they had purposes. So some were, this is where the queen's wife comes from. Some were warriors, some were priests, some were hunters, some were gatherers, some were where they practiced the traditional religious practices. So it depends on where, and it wasn't geographical, so it depends on which clan you came from. Those were important. You even have totems. And when they when some people explained to me the clans, I was like, that actually makes sense. And I asked my mom, and she goes, yeah, this is the clan you're from, and this is where your dad is from, and this is where I'm from. I'm like, what? Why didn't you ever tell me this? And to me, that felt more of an identity than the ethnic groups, because there was a purpose to the clans, and each clan has a, its own identity. They have their own purposes that they functioned pre-colonial times. And I was like, those makes more sense. I like those ideas. Whereas the ethnic groups, apart from literally the name and possibly where the each tribe, each ethnic group originated somewhere different in Africa and they settled in Rwanda. That's basically the difference. But with intermarrying now, you can't, there's very few that look either or. Majority of us have intermarried so much that we just have to kind of let it go, but we will never because of the conflict, and there are still pain. There's still so much pain in my people that it's just, I don't know when it's gonna end. That's why I just don't, I'm like, nope, I don't identify as either. And that always helps the argument. I'm like, do you want to know about my ethnic group though? My clan. That's my new favorite.
That's good. The reason why I was actually going to ask if you could recite the lines from the Serenity Prayer in your mother tongue. But it was
Oh.
nice to have a back history about the whole Hutu and Tutsi. So thank you for
That's all right. I can't. I've been in too
that.
long. I've been here since I was 11. I can barely speak the language. Well, I can, but no. Our language is so hard. Kinyarwanda is hard. Even though, like, even my own parents will tell you Kinyarwanda is one of the hardest languages ever. It's just, yeah, it's difficult. I don't understand how we even came up with this. Like, my mom has the Bible and the hymn books in Kinyarwanda, and sometimes I try to read it. It takes a long time to read one sentence, a very long time to read one sentence and to even make sense of it. So trying to put the Serenity Prayer in my language, wow,
Okay,
that's for too much.
maybe that's an assignment for another time. Your second quote, because you said earlier that you have two, what is the second line you're going to share with us today?
So the second one is a poem, and it's a little bit long, and it is a poem. It was quoted in the film Act of Valor. I don't know if you've seen that film.
That's the one of the US Navy SEALs.
That's it. That's it. They quoted this poem, and then I don't know. I couldn't get it out of my head, and then I had to go find the poem. I believe it was written originally by a American Indian chief called Chief Tecumseh, and it's called Live Your Life. And this has been, it's like a life motto. And it resonated with me when I saw it, and I was in high school as well again. I don't know why everything to me happened in high school, but hey. And it goes like, so live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Trouble no one about their religion. Respect others in their view and demand that they respect yours. Love your life, perfect your life, beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and its purpose in the service of your people. Prepare a noble death song for the day when you go over the great divide. Always give a word or a sign of salute when meeting or passing a friend, even a stranger when in a lonely place. Show respect to all people and grovel to none. When you arise in the morning, give thanks for the food and for the joy of living. If you see no reason for giving thanks, the fault lies only in yourself. Abuse no one and no things, for abuse turns the wise ones to fools and robs the spirit of its vision. When it comes to your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different wave. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home.
That is deep. That is very, very deep. So deep. The only thing I took out from that was the line, and correct me if I'm wrong, whereby if you find yourself in a foreign place, acknowledge a stranger.
So basically, always give a word or sign of salute when meeting or passing a friend, even a stranger when in a lonely place.
There you go. So that line reminds me of times where, as a black person, I can be walking the streets and it's with other ethnicities, but I'm the only black person around. And out of the blue, I come across another black person walking towards me. You know where I'm going with this. And I don't know the person from Adam, and neither does
No.
he know me, but there's the black nod, that look of
Yes.
acknowledgement, like, I see you.
Yes.
He sees
Yes.
me. I've had friends ask me, "Oh, do you know him?" I said, "No, I don't know
No.
him." And it's like, "So why?" I said, "It's a black thing."
It's a friend that you don't know yet, that you may
Yes.
not get to know yet, but somehow that recognition that we are both strangers in this land. You good, yeah?
Yeah.
Like
Yes.
I see you.
It's like, "I see you. You see me. I acknowledge you." And
Yep.
at that moment, just at that briefest of moments, you have an ally right
Yes.
there. So, going to this poem in question by the Native American chief,
Yes.
what drew you
Act of
to that
Valor.
poem? Yeah, what drew you to it?
I don't know, when they quoted it, I was just, because the movie was so powerful. Like, they went through a lot. And I've always liked soldier movies. To be fair, in my previous life, in my mind, I was a soldier. So for some reason, I love soldier movies and fighting movies. And when I saw it, I was like, this is so powerful. And I just had to go find the poem. I was like, where is this poem? It took a very long time because at the time, Google wasn't how Google is. I don't even know if we had Google. I think we had something else. It was a very
Alta
long time ago.
Vista?
Yeah, it wasn't easy to find, but I found
Ask Jeeves.
it eventually. Somewhere in the corners of the internet, I found it. And it was in the days where you could like write stuff down. There was no screenshots or keeping it. No, I had to write it down. So I wrote it down. And it spoke so much to me. Even my brother, we both love this poem. It's like a motto, like a life motto, or like, you know how people have like coats of armor, and then there's like a saying of like what that coat of armor stands for. And that's how I feel like this poem is for me. Like this is what you should aim to live your life like. Respecting others, that is such a big thing for me, and respecting others' religion is so big for me. Like, I, yes, want to have my faith, my beliefs, but I also try very, very hard to always be respectful of others' choices and others' faith and beliefs. So it spoke very much to who inherently I was or wanted to be. And it was like a guiding of like the kind of person I should be. Do not be afraid of death. It is normal. But live your life to the fullest so that when death does visit you, you'd be like, you know what? Die. I lived okay. I lived good. I did what I needed to do in the time that I had. I have no regrets, where you have no regrets, so that when death comes, you'd be like, yeah, take me. I'm good. I'm ready. Instead of always consistently fearing for it to come, you're living your best life, as we millennials like to call it. I'm living my best life. So that when death does come, you're not afraid. You're welcoming it. You are okay to go. You go, okay, yeah, I'm good. I can go. At every moment, live up to the best that you can be, as much as you can do, without regrets. And it just, it looked at death as such a beautiful thing, like, because it is part of life, but many of us struggle to accept that it is part of life. Many, many, many of us, especially in these times, it must be even harder because we're consistently bombarded with death because of this disease. And so it reminded me, and it consistently reminds me, that death is not a bad thing. It is just a bad thing if you didn't live to the best of your ability with what you had. Every day making the choice to live life. So that's why I love it. And just love your life, perfect your life, beautify all things in your life. And who doesn't want to do that? Respect others, but also demand respect. Because majority of the time we're told, show respect, but you should also demand respect from others. That's powerful.
That is interesting. I know, as an African, and you can relate to this, whereby, especially with, you've got certain elders, where your parents say, show him respect, he is XYZ of XYZ. And you're like saying, okay, sure. And of course, you have to respect your elders, but also respect is also earned. It's not just a, it's just not a free pass. Because I'm older than you, therefore you have to respect me. Yeah, of course, if you're in the military, if you're a soldier, you've got a rank. It's not the man, it's the rank.
The badge that they carry.
It's the rank that they respect.
Yeah.
But the same could also apply to the people who are older than us. But because you're old doesn't necessarily mean you have wisdom or maturity.
Nope.
And there's always this idea that because a person is older, based on their position in life or because of their age, we should therefore respect them. And it's like, no, it has to be earned.
Yes, it does. It's literally the same for me, where you're taught respect, but are you respected back? Do we respect our kids back? They deserve as much respect as we do. Yeah, so I really like that. And also, just as a Black person as well in the West, you can go through a lot of things that are very disrespectful. And so sometimes learning that, no, you need to demand your respect. Like, you should not be disrespected. A simple thing that most people joke about is, oh, don't touch a Black woman's hair. And it's like, oh, that's quite disrespectful, because me, when I came in England, I didn't know much about white people's hair or anything. I didn't see it close up. I'd only seen it on TV. But I didn't walk around trying to touch every white girl's hair. In fact, I didn't. I observed from afar, and I think the first time I did was when a friend of mine wanted her hair braided, because I did braids, and that was the first time I felt a white person's hair, and I was like, oh, so this is how it feels. But because she had given me permission to braid her hair, in the process I got to feel what her hair feels like, or what all the other white girls' hair felt like. But before that, I never had the audacity to come and want to touch their hair like they're a freaking puppy. So it's like people forget that actually, no, you're being disrespectful. We're not puppies. We're not on display at a museum. We are people. You can't just think, let me touch your head to see how it feels. No, keep your curiosity to yourself the same way we would keep our curiosity to ourselves, until maybe you make a friend who you can be comfortable at that. So if you're my friend and you're curious and you want to know, that's fine. Like everything else, you're my friend, of course. But random strangers doing it has happened to me. And you just go, what? So demanding that respect, that no, please do not invade my personal space. I deserve as much respect as you think you do. I'm not your puppy.
Even as a black man, I know not to touch a black woman's hair. I know that. It's not something you're taught. You just know. Do not touch.
But I think people assume, or you know, it's an angry black woman thing, or like they're just so serious and touchy. And I'm like, no, it's because you're actually treating us like we're a piece of animal in a museum or in the whatever they keep animals, where you can just go and be touching, I don't know, bamboos or lions or dolphins or whatever it is that you feel like touching.
It brings about images of Venus Hottentot. She was from East Africa, I believe. And she was big boned, for want of a better word. Anyway, she was brought over to the UK, and they began to probe her. I think her remains were also probed in question. But just that whole idea of whereby she's become sensualized.
Yeah.
A sensualized other. But going back to what you're saying about respect, the same could also be applicable to names. African names, whereby, no. Not just African names, names which aren't seen as part of the canon, if yes. you will, within the canon of the society we're in, whereby I've had people call me so many things. They say, is it Akin? Is it Atkin? And I call them out.
Where did the T come from?
Thank you. I'd even say to them, no, it is Akin. Because each name, if you ask most Africans or other countries or other ethnicities, they will tell you there's a power behind the name. There is a meaning behind the name. So when you disrespect the name, it's as if you're heaping a curse on a person. So either you get it right or don't say it. Or to be diplomatic, you just ask someone, you teach the person how to say it. Of course, they're never going to be able to pronounce it the way they should, but you give them an A for effort. Rather than someone, I've had people call him and say, is that Akin? And I say, no, it's Akin.
The extra Akin, I don't think Akin. They can
tell. Yeah, but the point being is that at least you're taking the time
to try and learn.
To try it. It's the same with me. I'm looking at your surname. I'm going to murder that surname, first of all, but I'm going to ask you to teach me how to say it.
Yes.
And it's all about respect. Anyway, look, we're going way too much in the conversation right now. So before we end the show, a question to ask you is this. If you were to give any advice to any millennial, what would you give based on the poems you've read out today and the prayer?
I'd say take it easy. Do the best that you can do. And be grateful for all that you do have. Because believe it or not, you have more than somebody else out there, especially if you've got access to this podcast. You definitely have more than many people out there. So yeah, that would be my advice.
Well, that is all the time we have today on the Swinging Palm Trees podcast. Ellie, thank you so much for coming on the show. A millennial trying her hand at adulting. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Ellie. Until next time, stay safe and be well.
Live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Trouble no one about his religion. Respect others and their views, and demand that they respect yours. Love your life. Perfect your life.
Beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and of service to your people. When your time comes to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different way. Sing your death song and die like a hero, going home.